So I barely even know where to start with this first ride. But basically, so it was delayed by about an hour and a half. That's about an hour and a half late. It's not too bad. It broke down really almost immediately. Like as soon as we got out of the outskirts of the car, like, you know, just long enough to be out of the city in the middle of nowhere, it broke down.
In this episode, we're going to talk about what it feels like to be A, stuck on a bus that broke down so much that B, his passengers were forced to spend the night on the bus twice in the middle of nowhere, and C, picking up passengers and their luggage because the bus that left before your bus on the same route also broke down. Jeez, where's Keanu Reeves and a bus with speed when you need it? Try to get comfy because this is going to be one long and bumpy ride.
You're listening to the Travel Horror Stories Podcast, a show that listens to real stories from travel bloggers and travelers just like you. Then we unpack those stories to discuss safety tricks, prevention treats, horror hacks, and follow-up tactics. The goal is to turn travel nightmares into dreams of beaches, sunshine, and margaritas.
And as always, you can head over to TravelHorrorStoriesPodcast.com for this and all the previous episodes, their show notes, and links to all the other places you enjoy listening to podcasts. If you're listening via Apple Podcasts, don't forget to give the episode a 5-star rating and leave a comment, because that will help more people find the show.
And now, from the Rudderless Travel Studio in downtown Toronto, Canada, here's your host, Christopher Rudder.
Alrighty, so the weather outside is not too bad considering the last week of April was pretty chilly with a snowstorm. Nothing like snow in April, am I right? That said, if my friends over on the East Coast were to hear me complaining about the snow in April, they'll think that I'm a wuss. They'll think that I'm a snowflake, pun intended. So bring on the snow, Mother Nature, bring it on. Today is May the 4th, so to my Star Wars fans, myself included, may the Force be with you. I just started watching that show, The Mandalorian, and I have to say, what an incredible show. If you haven't seen that yet, and you have Disney Plus, I highly recommend it. It's great, great stuff. But for this episode, we will need to move from space travel to bus travel, and we have yet another incredible travel horror story. And joining me today is Nick Leonard. How are you doing, Nick, and how's the pandemic treating you?
Yeah, well, I live in Lisbon, Portugal. So yeah, like many people, I'm here in lockdown. Yeah, I mean, your life is basically on hold. It's paused. I mean, obviously, I'm one of the lucky ones where I haven't had people who I'm close who contracted COVID-19 or who have died from it. But I'm just kind of waiting it out, basically.
Yeah, no, that's, I mean, thank goodness for that, eh? Lisbon is a great city. So, I mean, it's not, I mean, there could be worse places, I guess, to be locked down in. But I love Lisbon. That's a fantastic city. So tell us about yourself, because you're not a travel blogger. So tell us about, in fact, you know, we had your wife on the show, the episode before this one, Wendy, and she told us her horror story. And then, which is funny, is that by talking to her, we uncovered your horror story. So then right away, we had you as a guest right after her. So I'm grateful that you're here. So tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do.
Right. Well, I'm from Australia originally. Wendy's American. So we met in Italy and now we live in Portugal. So we're kind of an international couple. I studied journalism at university and I've done a few different things for work, but I've done a lot of work at major sporting events, doing news services for these events, both doing kind of reporting myself and also doing planning, things like that. I've also been a tour guide. Wendy and I met in Rome, and we were both tour guides there. And I also do some tour guiding work here in Lisbon. And I used to teach a little bit as well, so I've done quite a few different things. And as far as our horror stories go, we kind of share them
That's right. Yes, yes, that's right. Yeah, you guys are both on both of them. So that's I mean, her story was kind of nuts. And then she actually, we're going to play the game in a second, but your story sort of came up in the game that we were about to play. And then when we explored her story, then I was like, oh my gosh, that needs to be its own horror story and episode. So that's how you got dragged into this whole mess.
Yeah, and I mean, on the whole, our memories are great ones. But, you know, when you travel for many years, you're going to have a couple of horror stories thrown in there with good memories.
Of course. And I mean, the whole purpose of the show is to, you know, talk about these things that can happen. But we hope to try to offer some possible solutions and things like that. So that way, when you travel, you can, you know, remember this and maybe prevent it or something like that. The goal, trust me, the goal is to get you traveling, not to stop you from traveling, just despite the title. So do you want to play a game?
Yes, I do. Love games.
All right. Like, I love your energy. Okay, so we're going to do three stories, two truths, one lie. You're going to tell me three stories. Two of them are going to be true. One of them is going to be a lie. And maybe in one of your stories, you might uncover another travel horror story. Who knows? But yeah, so let me have it.
All right, so story number one is that I threw up on the floor of a bus in Bolivia. So in just outside of La Paz in Bolivia, there's a road which is actually, you can't go on it anymore, but it used to be a road that buses would go on, called the world's most dangerous road. It's this very narrow, mountainous kind of switchback road, and I don't do that well on, I have some motion sickness. And you could just look over, it was right on the side of a ravine, and you could just look over sort of down into the gorge, and you could see like buses. And vehicles that had gone over the edge. And so that didn't make me feel too well. And eventually, just with all the movement and all the switchbacks, I got really sick and I couldn't hold it. And that was it.
Oh, gosh. Okay.
All right. Number two is that I passed out at a Whirling Dervish Festival in Lahore, Pakistan. So it was very much a kind of a local celebration. And the Whirling Dervishes are a branch of Islam, a Sufi kind of sect of Islam, where people get into trances and they spin around really fast like that. And again, it's kind of related to motion sickness. So I was kind of watching them, and in the end, I just blacked out.
Oh, man.
And story number three is that Wendy and I were mugged at knife point in a taxi in Namibia. So we basically got into this taxi in Windhoek, the capital of Namibia, and there were a couple other people in it. It was sort of a shared taxi. At a certain point, they just stopped the car and locked the doors, and basically then just started grabbing at our stuff, at our bags, and looking for our money belt and things like that, and pulled out a knife, especially balls and stuff.
Oh, gosh. Okay. So the first one, I was in Croatia, and there's an island called Island Bol, and there's a city called Supetar, and there's an amazing beach on the other side of the island called Zlatnirat. And there was also where the buses was going really close to the ending of cliffs like that. So I can totally relate to you getting sick, because I was definitely getting sick. And to add insult to injury, you could actually see other cars that were down in the gorge. So right. It's kind of like
almost the same. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, there's like cars down there. Okay, that's not helping. So I think that is true. The Whirling Dervishes, I saw something like that myself. So when you brought that up, I was like, oh, cool. Because I saw that in Istanbul. I attended a show like that, and I remember sitting there going, what are we watching right now? what's happening? So it was quite impressive. I mean, for sure. But it was kind of like, wow, this is, I don't know. I'm just going to go ahead and say that that's true, because I do remember feeling a little bit like, okay, that I couldn't do that. But yeah, sure. I'm going to say that the story with the taxi cab thing is a lie. But that said, if that is true, then you guys could come back again for another episode to tell that story. So I'm going to go ahead and say that the taxi cab thing is a lie.
Unfortunately, the taxi cab is true. So yeah, oh, that might be another episode. That was not a good day.
You guys are a gold mine.
That was actually only 2 years ago, two and a bit years ago. So it was still pretty fresh in the memory. The lie is throwing up on the bus.
Wow. Okay. Sometimes I choose the obvious story and it's wrong. And then sometimes I choose the not so obvious story and it's right. I don't know. Throwing up on the bus just seems so that could be real, because every time I get on the bus personally, I immediately start to get sick. I don't know if it's because the bus is higher or if it's those jerky movements, but I immediately get sick when I'm on a bus. I can't stay on the bus for more than 2 hours.
Well, and our actual story for today is about a bus ride. So that'll that might make you a bit queasy over there.
Fantastic. What would you do if, while en route from Dakar, Senegal to Bamako, Mali in West Africa, the bus you're riding breaks down the minute you reach the outskirts of the city? In fact, it breaks down so many times that you're forced to spend 2 nights sleeping on the bus. And believe it or not, that is only where the story begins. What brought you to Africa in the first place?
Well, that's kind of part of the funny part of it, I guess, is that we were in West Africa and we weren't really supposed to be there. We planned this trip in North Africa. And we wanted to go to Morocco, which we did go to, and then we wanted to go to Algeria. And at the time, and this was in 2006-7, late 2006, early 2007, Algeria wasn't really safe, or some parts weren't safe, and we'd planned to go, and in the end, we abandoned it. And we were supposed to continue from Algeria to Tunisia. So we really had this idea of spending time in these three countries in North Africa. And in the end, Morocco was the only one we went to, and then we had this extra time on our hands. And West Africa was kind of just, you know, south of Morocco, essentially. So it wasn't something that we thought about or planned for, you know, many months or anything like that. We just kind of fell into it. So we went to Senegal. That was the first country that we were in. The story basically takes place crossing from Senegal into Mali, which is the next country to the east. And I think one of the first things to understand is that, you know, obviously everybody's aware that Africa is a developing part of the world. I think it's quite common for people to just lump all of Africa together as one entity, you know, with one level of development and infrastructure and things like that. But it's, of course, not true. North Africa, which is quite different north of the Sahara. And then you have certain countries like South Africa and Namibia, given their history, which are more developed as well. But basically, West Africa, which is the area that we're in, is pretty much the poorest part.
Interesting.
So on this trip, some of the countries we went to, for example, Mali, which is part of this story, at the time was the fourth poorest country in the world by the UN Human Development Index. And Burkina Faso, which is another one we went to, was the third poorest country. So these are really like among the absolute poorest countries in the world.
Wow.
So that part is, of course, a shock. And when it's something, it was the first time that we'd been to sub-Saharan Africa. And so, you know, it was a lot different from some of the other places that we've been to before. Even though we traveled in a lot of other countries before, we'd never really seen quite like that in terms of the development, like that.
Right.
So it was already kind of off to an interesting start. we spent some time in Senegal, but that wasn't really the focus of where we were trying to go. We were trying to get to Mali. And so basically from Dakar, which is the capital of Senegal, to Bamako, which is the capital of Mali, about 1,200 kilometers. So where I'm from in Australia, that's the distance between Sydney and Brisbane. You can drive that in sort of 10 hours. You know, in Canada, I'm sure you've got similar length trips like that. Anyway, so we were basically had to travel from, you know, this distance because there was really nothing in between. There was no places to stop or nothing of interest in between. So it was kind of a long journey, and we knew it was a long journey.
Right.
But it was one of those things where you just have to kind of get it over in one hit. Because just breaking it up didn't really seem to make any sense. There wasn't really anything interesting to see along the way.
Right.
And we were delayed a little bit starting out because there was an election in Senegal. And when there's an election in Africa, you don't really want to be traveling, or you just sort of want to be, stay inside and be a bit safe just in case, because you never know if something might kind of erupt. So we ended up leaving a couple of days after we wanted to leave originally, just waiting for the election to be over with. And we had seen that there was a train that was leaving on the Monday from Dakar to Bamako, and that was perfect. So, you know, we love trains, and even though it was in West Africa and we'd been told it was a terrible train, we thought, you know, how bad can it be? It's a train, right? But this wasn't, it's not the kind of situation where you have a permanent schedule and where you have, I don't know, you can easily buy your tickets in advance or buy them online, heaven forbid, at that time in Africa. Basically, we had gone to the train station a couple of days earlier, and there was just a handwritten sign saying, like, next train, Monday, 2 p.m. It was just on a piece of paper that was just stuck to the door. Wow. And so we went back on the Monday, and they don't sell tickets until the day of the train as a way to, you know, so they don't have to employ someone in the days leading up to it to sell tickets. You know, they can sort of get it all done in a shorter time period. So we turned up about 3 hours early, and it was my birthday as well. So we turned up about 3 hours early for the train. And then once we got there, we saw that they changed the handwritten note and they postponed it till the next day.
Oh, gosh.
So we had to decide if we were going to wait one more day or not. We'd already waited a couple more days longer than we wanted to. We'd already checked out of where we were staying. We didn't like the car to begin with, really. And so we thought, do we wait one more day for this train? And maybe they'll delay it again. You know, who knows? So we looked around to see if we could get a bus as an alternative. And then we found out that there was a bus leaving that afternoon, 4 p.m. So we thought about it and we decided, okay, we'll take the bus. And so this was Monday afternoon. They told us it would arrive basically in the middle of the night, Tuesday into Wednesday, or worst case, Wednesday morning. So it was going to be about 35 to 40 hours on a bus, which is already, you know, not something that we were really excited about. But as I said, it was just a trip that we had to take to get where we were trying to go.
Right.
So we decided to take the bus, which was not the right thing to do in the end, but we didn't know that at the time. The bus itself wasn't too bad in terms of comfort. It was probably a hand-me-down bus from Europe, probably from France. So we got seats sort of towards the front. I would say in terms of comfort, it was probably similar to, let's say, economy class on a plane, with a little more legroom, perhaps. So we were kind of thought, okay, this is not bad. This seems okay. You know, you could recline your seat a little bit. There was a little bit of cushioning on the seats, and it seemed okay. That was basically the high point of the bus ride.
Wow. Okay.
I barely even know where to start with this bus ride. But basically, it was delayed by about an hour and a half. We left about an hour and a half late, which is not too bad. It broke down really almost immediately. Like, as soon as we got out of the outskirts of the car, like, you know, just long enough to be out of the city in the middle of nowhere, it broke down. So after about an hour or so. They couldn't fix it. And so we basically didn't move the rest of that night, and we spent the night just sleeping on the bus, just broken down, like about an hour, hour and a half out of the car to begin with. And so basically there were, apart from the driver, there were these other guys, and we just called them the bus guys. There were three or four other guys who were kind of like employed by the bus, but on a very ad hoc basis. And what they'd done is they'd loaded the roof of the bus with all these boxes. So they were doing some kind of import-exporting, you know, from Senegal into Mali, but very much, you know, at a budget kind of local level. You know, it wasn't a big company doing anything like this. It was just these guys who were selling, you know, I don't even know what. And so they were all trying to fix the bus because they kind of, the bus guys doubled as, you know, the mechanics and the guys who broke up the fights. And, you know, they had all these different roles. And so it actually was necessary to have all these guys. So they were just trying to fix it. And it took them quite a long time to do it. So we spent the first night just on the side of the road, sleeping in the bus. We got going again early the next morning. They fixed the engine and we got going again. We passed another bus that had broken down, and that bus was sort of beyond repair. So we took on all their passengers and all of their gear and stuff as well, because that bus was doing the same kind of export deal. And so it takes, like, all these bus guys have to go onto the roof and, you know, tie down all the boxes and everything. It took like an hour and a half to transfer all this stuff onto our bus. And then of course, there wasn't enough room on the roof because we were now taking two buses worth of stuff. So they just began putting it in the aisle.
Oh my gosh.
You know, like, you know, when you're a kid, if you build like a fort out of cardboard boxes, that's kind of what it was like. But I mean, if you imagine, you know, in countries like the countries we're from, in terms of the health and safety requirements and things like that, you can't just pile boxes up, you know, almost roof high in the aisle of a bus, right? And so, luckily we were near the front of the bus, but the people who were at the back, every time we had to get out, they just had to like climb over all this stuff, you know, it was this mission to get out of the bus. Wow. And if there was some kind of fire or something, you know, it would have been an absolute disaster. Anyway, so we continued here on this second day. There were a couple of fights that day between passengers for various reasons. There was one with this young girl, and she had her shirt ripped off by somebody else. We had no idea what was going on and what it was all about. They were speaking their local languages. But, you know, the bus guys would have to come in and kind of mediate these fights. That took place every now and then.
Oh, my gosh.
So that was kind of a highlight, if you like, of the second day. And all these things just kept going wrong, basically. Like, we broke down, you know, quite often, just, you know, not for a whole night like that first time, but we would just break down every now and then. The road was really bad most of the time, and, you know, it's a big bus with a lot of people. And when you're having to swerve around potholes and all this, on sort of kind of semi-paved roads or sometimes dirt, you know, it's just really hard for the bus to do it. And it takes its toll on the bus, and it causes it to break down and things like that. But, you know, there are also just these weird kind of unexplained things. You know, at around lunchtime, they stopped somewhere, kind of in the middle of nowhere as a lunch stop. But it was kind of on the outskirts of this town, but there was nowhere to eat. And Wendy and I had kind of, you know, stocked up on food before we left so that we'd have, you know, snacks and things with us. So we ate some stuff that we had in our bags, but nobody else really had that. Then we got back on the bus and started going again. And after a while, some of the passengers said, "When are we going to stop for lunch?" And the guy said, "We just stopped for lunch." And said, no, there was nothing. We couldn't get anything to eat. So we had to stop again. And then the bus guys were mad. And, you know, all these things just kept happening like that.
Oh, my gosh.
So we spent the second night on the bus. So this was around the time that we were supposed to arrive, kind of in the middle of that night. But we hadn't even crossed the border yet. So we were still in Senegal. So we spent the second night on the bus, and then early the next morning we arrived at customs. We exited from Senegal, which was quite painless, actually, although all of the local people had to pay what they call an exit visa, which is to say a bribe at the border. It was interesting that Wendy and I weren't asked to pay that because I guess we just weren't involved in that kind of bribe economy, and we had proper visas to get to Mali and things like that. Anyway. So we arrived at customs early in the morning for Mali at about 9 a.m., and we spent the whole day. Basically, the customs guys wanted to inspect all of the boxes.
So they made
the bus guys take them all down, and it took 3 hours to get all the boxes down off the roof, all of them out of the aisles, and all of this. And it was really hot, too, that day. It was crazy hot, actually, and we were just in this heat, just sitting there, just dying. I remember we bought some vendors had hooked up a freezer to a generator, and they were just selling like bottled water frozen, and we would just buy it, and that was just the greatest thing because it was so hot and basically miserable that we just had, at least we had this cold water or this frozen water. But basically they'd essentially unloaded the whole bus except for a couple boxes, and then the customs guys said, they looked at a couple and then they said, "Oh, we don't care anymore. You can load them back." And it took like another 3 hours to load them back up. And in the end, we spent 9 hours at customs.
My gosh.
And it was just, that was, you know, it was funny because looking back, I wrote a little blog thing about it. So I'm kind of reading that, reminiscing today, in preparation for this. But I went through these different emotional phases on this bus ride. You know, you go through these different periods where you feel different things. But my one of my two most angry points was this point here, waiting for this 9 hours at Mali customs. And of course, then what happened was it was now the afternoon. So it had been about 48 hours we'd been on the bus. And so as we were pulling out of the customs, I said to Wendy, "I bet you that immigration is like 100 meters down the road, A, and B, it might be closed because it's now kind of 5:30.
Oh,
And immigration was about 200 meters down the road, and it wasn't closed, but it was closing. And guys said, you guys have to get in real quick, and we have to do this because otherwise they'll close and we'll have to be stuck here for the night. And I just thought, while we were waiting, we could have all gone on foot to do the immigration procedures and waited for the bus to come out of customs. But we all just waited at customs, and we almost missed immigration because we were sitting there for 9 hours doing nothing when we could have actually been doing the passport procedures.
Wait, and how much meters was it from the bus?
Oh, like 200 meters.
Oh, come on.
But it just didn't seem to, I don't know, occur to anybody or I don't know, to leave the bus. But yeah, we could have just walked it, done the passport and waited for the bus there. And then, I mean, in the end, we got lucky. We did actually get through the immigration port. And so then by now we crossed into Mali. And then the problem was in Mali, more so than Senegal, we had to make these stops to pay bribes. So what would happen is the driver would stop at some kind of checkpoint, and he would have to get out, and he'd have to negotiate the bribe with the whoever it was there. And that could take hours. That could take 2 hours, 2.5 hours. And so you think that you're on your way, you're going, and then you just stop, and you're just stopped there. And we just couldn't handle it by this point. That was my second angry point, was bribery. And so finally, we late at night, sort of maybe 11 p.m., we arrived at this kind of border town, Mali. We weren't at our destination yet. So this was now, we were facing the prospect of the third night, consecutive night on the bus. And Wendy and I just couldn't take it anymore. So we asked, because we were in a town, we thought that there might be a hotel there. And so we asked the bus guys, we said, can we get our bags out of the bottom of the bus? And they said, you know, what do you want your bags for? We're not, you know, aren't you going to Bamako? We said, yeah, but we have to get off this bus. We just can't handle this anymore. And so we got a hotel for the night, which was amazing. I mean, it wasn't even a good hotel, but just to be out off the bus, you know, that was incredible. You know, they had soft drinks and they had aircon. And so with that. And so we spent that night in the hotel, and then we just said, okay, the next morning, there was nothing in the town. The next morning, we'll just find whatever transport's going, you know, our way. Okay? And so we did that. We got up late, you know, we slept in, enjoyed being in the hotel room a little bit. So the next morning, we checked out of the hotel and we went to get a different form of transport. So we found this kind of minivan that was going, and it was much smaller and it was much faster. So we were happy to be on it. And we went on this minibus for around 4 or 5 hours, and then we made a stop and we saw people from the original bus. It caught up to them, even though they'd left much earlier in the morning than we had, and their bus was broken down again.
Oh my gosh.
And so we made a little stop to get some food or something, and then we went on our way on our smaller bus and we left them behind. And so then we kept going and going and going, and we went on some really bad roads in the next portion that I really feared for the original bus. Once it got back up and going, it would have really struggled these stretches. Anyway, finally we made it to Bamako at about 1 a.m. This is on the Friday morning. We left on the Monday afternoon. So all told, it took us 81 hours. But the original bus hadn't made it yet.
Oh, man.
And so, you know, depending on how quickly they were able to fix it and how it was able to negotiate these next road parts, I mean, they might have been looking at 90, 95, 100 hours to go, yeah, about 1,200 kilometers.
This segment is brought to you by GPS My City. Do you love exploring cities on foot at your own pace? Well, GPS My City's mobile apps, available on iOS and Android, feature self-guided city walks and GPS-powered travel articles written by travel bloggers and travel content creators for over 1,000 cities worldwide. Visit the link in the show notes to learn more. All right, let's break this down.
I've never heard a story like this before.
I mean, it was just amazing. And, you know, I mean, the thing about it, the real lesson out of it, I mean, a lot of times you're feeling sorry for yourself. You're saying, why are we doing this? Why would we voluntarily take a trip like this? But the real thing is seeing the local people, that they have no choice.
Yeah.
This is what daily life is like. And there was one guy in particular we spoke to. He was from Mali and he lived up in Timbuktu in the north. He was a manuscript storer. He was working on manuscripts up there because they have a lot of them. And he had been invited to go to this training in London, 2-week training seminar. And that was probably a really great opportunity for him to go and have this training and be able to bring this knowledge back to the work that he was doing. But in Mali, there was no embassy for the UK, so he had to go to Senegal to get his visa.
So
he had traveled from Timbuktu to Senegal, and then he got his visa, and then he had to wait for the election, as we had, that he was on this original bus. But the whole process had taken him over a week to travel, to get the visa and come back, and he was in danger of missing his flight.
Holy smokes.
To London. And so he actually left the bus before we did because he said, this is not going to make it in time. I have to get on something faster. So I don't know if he ever made it, but he spent all this time trying to get his visa and, you know, for this great opportunity to go to this training program, and maybe he didn't make it. So just the stories like that were what really hurt me.
Unfortunately, at this point of the show, the internet has completely broken down. I think this bus story might be cursed. So I'm going to have to finish up by commenting on Nick's last point. Now, typically, as you guys know, at the end of each episode, we try to talk about lessons learned. And I feel the takeaway from this story isn't about what they did right or what they did wrong, except towards the end when they opted to stay in the hotel for the night and jump on a different bus in the morning. I think the takeaway here, and to Nick's point, is that they were fortunate to have a glimpse into the lives of other people in a different part of the world. Experiences like this humble you and put things into perspective. And it's one of the main reasons why I travel. I love learning from other people through their culture, customs, food, music, and stories. And having these experiences, however good, however bad, makes you a better human being. Well, at least that's what it does for me. I want to thank Nick for being on the show and sharing his story. And I'm so sorry that the internet just decided to quit. Now, Nick doesn't have a blog, but you can visit his wife's blog over at The Nomadic Vegan, and I'll leave all the links in the show notes. All right, case closed. That's it for this episode. I hope you enjoyed it. Don't forget that you can listen to the show over at www.travelhorrorstoriespodcast.com. And if you're listening on your mobile device, please take a second to give the episode a 5-star rating and leave a comment. It really helps the show and episodes get discovered by more people. Plus, your feedback will help me tweak and change the show to make it the best show on the internet. Yes. Cheers.